The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Thursday, the 10th of June, 2021. On the podcast today, Vadim Alexander, Head of Healthcare at SB Angel, discusses allergy therapeutics, AGY ticker, and they've done very well of late, and especially since he last mentioned them back in March. Also, Dan Lane, senior analyst at Free Trade, discusses Ted Baker, Card Factory, Auto Trader, and ITM Power. And as always, at the end of the podcast, I have two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most read RNSs too. By the way, you can check out both these lists, in fact, top 10 visions of these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk. We'll also see lots of other content. There's an article there on Amino Technologies. There's one there, well, in fact, there's Zach's Trading Cafe, and he talks to Dr. Anne Brindley, CEO of Nuformix. Plus, article on Truefin. There's one there on Salt Lake Potash. And of course, I always like to check out the COVID-19 Index. It's at the top of the page there. Biggest rise of the day is Omega Diagnostics, up 10% to 65 pence. Biggest fall there is Frontier Group, down 8% pretty much to 105. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Vadim Alexander, Head of Healthcare at SP Angel. You're at Vadim?
Yeah, good. How are you doing, Justin?
Good. I can't think of it. When's the last time we spoke? Was it like, in fact, it was in, not this month, but I think in May, wasn't it? 27, for a while yet. So it's nice to get you back on, fella. You busy?
Yeah, just very, very busy with various deals that are on. So yeah, no, okay. good to be back.
Okay, yeah. Well, the company we talked about a few months back, Allergy Therapeutics, AGY is the ticker. I think that March the 4th, we talked about them. They closed about 18 pence. They're now at 26.5 pence. So what's been happening? There's another one here you've picked. And in fact, the trend on this is very nice. I must have looked at the chart last time. But since March of 2020, and you know, most stocks have done well since then, but they went down to 8 pence on that dash for cash crash that happened around the pandemic when everything locking down. They've done eight, in fact, they touched 7 pence. They're at 26 pence now. So if anyone had bought back then, that was a good buy. But just remind us what they're about. It sort of suggests in the title what they're about, allergy therapeutics. Just remind us, if you could, Vadim.
Yeah, so basically they produce allergy-based solutions to things, allergies like hay fever, dust mites, food allergies, and the like. So really, as the name describes, you know, they really are therapeutics for allergies. Mm-hmm. And I mean, this company, unlike some of the more speculative healthcare companies, you know, they have a substantial amount of revenues. They have clocked, you know, regular systematic revenue growth. You know, it's not huge revenue growth, but it's consistent. You know, somewhere between 5% and 10% revenue growth every year. And you know, I just why I've always liked this company. I'm a holder of this company. I think it's one of these steady, more predictable businesses, and yet it still has the upside of clinical programs. So look, we can get into that. So just how I divide kind of the valuation on this business is my main thesis on this one is that it's a relatively safe business compared to other healthcare companies, and yet it's grossly undervalued in my opinion compared to other healthcare companies. So it gives you the safety, and yet it doesn't give you the even though the stock's been doing well since, you know, we spoke about it last time, I still think there's a lot of mileage here. And I'll take you through the math. So they did about, I think, 55 million, 54 million in the first half.
Yeah.
And it is seasonal, this business, for obvious reasons. The allergies are seasonal, like hay fever and things like that. So expect the second half to be, it's always been this way. There's, you know, second half is less in revenues. But nonetheless, I think rough expectations around 80 to 90 million total revenues for the year. And, you know, their profit margins are, I think on the first half, they had about 38% profit margin on that business. Excluding R&D costs, because they're plowing back their R&D, that money into R&D spend for new products, so for further allergy products. Namely, one of their most advanced programs is in grass allergies, which that's the next program. We'll talk about that in a second. But I guess the main point is that business itself is ticking along nicely. You know, we'll eventually hit 100 million in not too long a period. And it's predictably, you know, it's predictable sales growth. And yet the market cap of this business is 170 today.
Yeah.
So 100, and then the last thing is that they're sitting on a cash mountain of 50 million, 48 million sterling in cash.
Wow.
So if you take 100, you know, take your 170 market cap, knock off roughly 50. So you're at 120, 122. Okay. And you're trading on, you know, almost 100 million revenues.
1.2 sales. Yeah, it was 1.2 sales. Yeah. Nothing, is it? I mean, even looking at, profit for the period, this is the interims here. That's 15 million. So yeah. If you knock off cash, it's less than 10, less than a P of 10, you know, and they're growing. So, yeah, it does seem like it's not expensive at all.
Exactly. Whether it's 1.2 or slightly higher, but it's less than 2x sales. We're talking about, you know, 120 EV, 122 EV on, let's call it 85 in sales for the year, right? Mm-hmm. So still, you know, the whole point is that's about what is it, 1.5 roughly times sales. Mm-hmm. I mean, you and I know companies that, other companies that we like that are on 5x sales.
A growing business, you know, it's hard to say put them on 1x or even anywhere less than 2x sales. That's very cheap, I think. If it's growing, it's profitable, it's got cash that big, you know.
Absolutely. And standalone, that business should be, so the whole business should be worth, in my opinion, more than that 1.5x sales, just for that, okay? But then what they're doing as well is, that's the second bit that I wanted to mention, is then they should also be treated as a clinical a drug developer, which is exactly what they're doing. So they have a phase 3 trial that's in progress right now. So the way this phase 3 trial, I won't get into the mechanics of it too much, but they've done a pre-trial for their pivotal phase 3 trial. That pre-trial is progressing well. They're expecting results in the second half of this year. Then that leads into a phase 3 trial, which will commence in H222. Okay, but this is for grass allergies, which huge market for that. I mean, I think the estimates are something like between 10% and 30% of the world population suffers from grass allergies. So much like they had a huge market for the existing allergy products, and which are growing, they'll add another big indication on top of that. You're not paying anything for that. That's free now. There's a free carry in this. You know what I mean? They have another program, which is a peanut allergy program, admittedly, you know, far earlier stage. But peanut allergies is a massive, massive area. So, you know, they should be able to create value out of that program. But again, you know, you're paying 1.5x sales of the existing substantial revenue business, generating business, which is steadily growing and is profitable. And then you get these clinical programs on top of that for free.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? My son suffers really badly with all kinds of allergies, like grass allergies and tree. And, literally, his eyes bulge up and he sneezes nonstop. I just thought, what? I thought, before we had these, you know, sort of, this medicine, this solution, how did people survive? It's like, it's phenomenal. I don't know if it's part of the modern day society and what we're eating or what, but he really suffers really badly, you know?
Yeah.
So it's a massive market.
It is a massive, and it will continue to be so. And it's proven by their steady growth in revenues on the existing product base. So look, I own this stock. I like it. I think it's one that's different from the more speculative ones that we've looked at. Yet it gives you the speculative upside on the clinical programs that they have. You know.
Yeah. Well.
But just on the revenue multiple and on the cash balance, it's in a healthy financial position. It should be worth more, in my opinion. And that's why I think this one a bit slower. The market's reacting, but it's systematically reacting, and the stock is progressively re-rating.
Yeah. I would say one thing on the timing, if anyone's done research on this, the timing, it tends to rally. If you look at what's called an RSI, which is the Relative Strength Index, it's had sort of 1, 2, 3, 4 up legs, and it's just on one of those up legs right now, and it tends to have a bit of a breather, pull back a little bit, and that's when I time it. I think when the RSI comes down to about 50-60, at the moment it's over 70, which is technically known as overbought, but sometimes companies can really move after that. But I'd have a breather, but it seems like it's in a decent upward trend, you know.
You're absolutely correct. So you see, if you look at the stock chart over the last 2 years, you know, it spikes up, comes back, spikes up, comes back. Exactly. So yeah. Steady, you know, so buy on the dips. Exactly. I think we've spoken yeah. about that before. So yeah, now it's currently spiking in the last couple of days. But yeah, I wanted to flag it because it's just, it's one of these healthy businesses.
How long have you held these? When did you buy it?
When did I buy it? I bought it on that dip way back when. So let me tell you, about 2 years ago. So I think I got in around 950. So March 2020.
Nice.
I'm happy. Happy holder.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
But haven't sold a share. And, you know, there's been a few rallies and I just don't see it. You know, I could have sold at 18p.
Yeah.
And if you see that spike, it's come all the way back from 18 down to 13, right? But my belief is that even today, why have I not sold any? Because the business, the math doesn't stack up on this one. While the whole healthcare market has rallied, you know, 5 times, 10 times in some stocks we know, 100 times in some other stocks we know, this one has what, doubled? And
yeah.
yet it's the one that's producing steady revenues and has all the clinical upside of new programs.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's, I don't know what's wrong. There might be overhang. Who knows? You know, over time, these things sort themselves out, right? They eventually clear. Maybe there was a stock overhang, for all I know. But, you know, we have seen that sort itself in this, you know, sort itself out in this stock. It's going up steadily now. And I just, the reason I'm holding is because I see there's a lot of, I still think it's grossly undervalued.
Yeah, yeah.
And,
you do?
And they keep steadily coming out with positive results.
Yeah, yeah. I think some people, I mean, some people don't know what they are sometimes. They don't know if they're a trader or an investor. I would say always become an investor because investors are the richest people in the world. Traders generally aren't. And if you look at any of the stats on any of the trading platforms, the majority of people lose their money trading. So rather than trade the share price, just look at the value of the business. Look, because you're an investor in a business, you know, and that's it. And you can see more upside in the business because it's not overvalued. They're still growing. They've got plenty of cash. What's the downside here? Isn't, you know, it's very little. They're still improving as a business. And so, I mean, I think some people put too much faith in charts. I only ever look at charts to try and make sure I'm not buying a spike because I don't want to sit in a paper loss for like a month or 2 months or 3 months or whatever. But it's basically charts are, you know, are when to sort of buy, but fundamentals and actually looking at the business of what to buy. And then look at a chart just, you know, quickly and say, okay, I'll wait a week or so or whatever, and or 2 weeks. And so that's it. But yeah, you're right. I mean, why should you sell? Just because the share price has gone up, you still, it's not overvalued in any way whatsoever. Now, if you're talking about a company on 100 times revenue, fair enough, you may want to sell it, but it's nowhere near that. It's only just over 1 times revenue, you know? So yeah, there we are.
Well, exactly. And I'll give you another example. You know, one we talk about a lot and have spoken about a lot is Cambridge Cognition, right?
Yeah.
And you remember, you know, it had doubled and then it had doubled again. You know. So my main point there is when a stock's undervalued, sometimes it's so colossally undervalued that it just remains that way for
yeah,
a while. So
yeah.
you could double and it could double again. This is one that's just there is no logic as to why it's priced here today, even at these levels. So yes, I'm not suggesting to buy on a spike. I completely agree with you. But my main point is why am I holding and why have I held, say, Cambridge Cognition throughout that, you know, that period is because when it had doubled, it was still grossly undervalued.
Yeah,
and then,
yeah.
you know, so here's a good example of one that, yes, it's rallied. It's doubled from those ultra lows, whatever it was 2 years ago. But it's still not, you know, it's still not an expensive stock. That's the way I see it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know? And I always think whenever you're investing, whenever you start investing in something, rather than just chase hot stocks, always try and find a bargain on a company that's improving, you know, because there are plenty like this. There's always companies overlooked or under the radar. You know, they're
yeah.
doing well. That basically, you know, haven't had the benefit of promotion in some way or whatever. PR has been a bit low, and it's like a quiet stock, you know. And they're always out there. You can find them if you look hard enough. You're just doing some research, and this is one of those stocks, isn't it? That hasn't maybe had as much promotion as other companies, and so it's still an opportunity there. Marvelous stuff. AGY and Allergy Therapeutics. Vadim, speak to you next week.
Thanks, Justin. Speak soon.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Dan Lane, Senior Analyst at Free Trade. Dan, thanks for joining me.
Hi, Justin.
You know, just talking to you then about actually the interest in how busy you are at Free Trade. And what do you put it down to? You see lots of new signups there happening and people joining as users. Do you see it as a general, which I quite like this. I mean, you know, I set up an investment club and basically to get people into investing, because it's changed my life. I love it. I've had a passion for it for years. And it's not only about just making money, but it is largely about that. It's creating your own wealth. And I think that's a big thing. People, you know, will acquire qualifications or learn how to do something and then get a job for the rest of their life and realize they're still never going to amass a decent amount of wealth, or they're always going to struggle to pay off their mortgage or have some financial freedom. And investing can give you that, you know. But I mean, and so I want people to get into investing. So I'm quite interested when you said there that signups on your site have gone through the roof there. What do you put that down to? Do you think it's a lockdown, or what's happening?
Well, I think you're right. There's a bit of pressure on especially younger people to take control of their financial futures, but it's also coming the other way. You know, people want to be involved in it. And I think traditionally, maybe the industry has put a few blockers in there, you know, super high fees, made everything a little bit harder to access. Whereas free trade, we're really trying to, you know, combat that. You know, we have a low monthly ISA fee of £3. We have, you know, a 0.45 levy on US shares. But that's kind of it in terms of, you know, we don't charge commissions on trades, which is kind of the big thing. If you've got 100, 200 quid to pay 10, 12 quid on that trade, it could be actually quite off-putting. So I think that's what's driven people to us.
Yeah, and do you know what? You're right there about almost the incumbents, the people who earn their money from the city, you know, in fees. It's a lot of terminology, you know, in investing. There's all kinds of financial ratios that you just have to know about. But when I've largely talked to friends who are not into investing, but they want to get into investing, and they say, well, I've got a financial advisor. And I said, so what are you invested in? They said, oh, I don't know yet. So they look at it. They said, okay, I'm invested in this fund here and this fund here, by the looks of it, and this fund. And I said, what? And they charge you to buy into those funds. Yes. So essentially what they're doing there is put an extra cost on top of what you could do yourself. I know there's lots of funds out there, but you can keep it, you know, simple. And that's why I've done some videos on this. I said, that person is charging you, but the middleman, you can do exactly what he's doing, you know. He's not managing that fund. He's just basically buying a fund that's already there. And so there's so many, and I do think it's like that, you know, parts of investing. People are just, you know, trying to keep their jobs, essentially. So, yeah, it's nice that you break down this, you know, transparency, the costs and all that stuff, because it is worth it. I liken it to anything. I said, you can't become a professional, you know, overnight in any profession. So don't think you can do it in investing, but you don't have to, because you can start with funds, and they are pretty much, you know, widely diversified. And if you like it and you want to get more active, then you can learn slowly and get into it, because it's not as hard as people make it out. There's lots of moving variables, but when it comes down to it, I think, you know, look at the business and is the business improving? And look at the price you're paying for that business, and how, you know, all that stuff. And I just want to say, you know, I'm so, you know, passionate about investing. I just think it should be taught from a young age in school, because it's one of the only ways. And I said there's only two ways to build decent wealth in life. One is to own a successful business, or you can own a share of a successful business. And and if you look at any of these, you know, rich lists they do around the world, most of the people in there are business owners. And the other ones are investors. And that's it. Not traders, but investors. So it just makes sense to build their wealth. But, go on.
This is exactly what our mission is. We want to get everyone investing. And we're you know, we have this app, but we also have a full suite of educational materials. You know, I read a daily newsletter called Honey. Really, really kind of trying to keep everyone up to date without any of the jargon. So, yeah, I'm completely on the same page.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, do you know what? Let's talk some individual companies here, some news out. Let's start off with a company that hasn't got any news out, but we're supposed to have news out. And someone asked me on my investment club chat forum, so should I be worried that companies are delaying their financial results? And that can happen sometimes. And I said, well, listen, I'm generalising here, but it's not a good sign, because there's one of two things happening there. Either they're waiting to get some better news involved in it somewhere, which means they're not happy with the results so far, or they're disorganised and they're late, and that's not good either. Because, you know, what impression does that give you of the business? Now, Ted Baker, you said, was supposed to have news out twice, wasn't they? And they've delayed it. What's happening?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, Ted Baker wasn't in a fantastic position anyway, but they've pushed the results out twice, and I know because I had to get up at, you know, 6:45 to get ready for the results twice to be told they weren't out. So already in a bad mood looking at them. But to be honest, I mean, even without the results, they're going to come out next Monday, it looks like now. But even without that, I mean, looking at Ted Baker, over the past year, we've been buying into kind of this comfy culture, not this classy culture, whenever we're buying clothes now, because we didn't get out. We, you know, why were you buying nice clothes or a nice bag or whatever? Because you weren't getting out. That's translated. That's a simple narrative, but that's translated. Analysts are starting to predict that it, you know, they might hit somewhere in the region of a 70 million loss. And that's down from like an 18 million profit year before. So that's, I mean, listen, if I was Ted Berger, I wouldn't be rushing to get the results out if that was the case. Yeah. I think, you know, one thing about Ted Berger is they have neglected this online strategy for years because they put a lot of money into these like fancy stores, and their stores actually did look quite nice. But, you know, it's 2021. Where is your online strategy? And they started to get that kicked in Q1 last year. Now, it hadn't fully materialized by the time the pandemic had hit. I would surmise that maybe that's not given them the results that they really need over the past year to justify themselves and some sort of turnaround.
Yeah. That's it. When you put all your eggs in one basket, you know, like shopping, for example, and I find that a very odd strategy when you put a lot of money into physical stores, when you know pretty much, even before the pandemic, it speeded up, of course, but even before the pandemic, you know, online was always getting bigger year on year. It was taking market share was getting bigger. So it's odd that you wouldn't fully leverage that side of the business. Because do you know what odd though? I couldn't believe though. When you say that about comfy clothes, and I thought exactly the same as that. And then Boohoo came out with their results, you know, during the pandemic. They're doing very well. I said, who's buying clothes? And then someone pointed out to me that Boohoo's crowd maybe is the Instagram crowd that basically buy clothes just to take pictures of them on Instagram, you know, so it doesn't matter where they are. They could be in their bedroom, and most of them are younger girls, maybe. But maybe that explains it, you know. There's still a massive Instagram audience who didn't need to travel to buy a new top to show it off on Instagram, you know.
Yeah, and it's also the difference between a 10 quid top and maybe, you know, a 45, 50 pound
exactly,
shirt.
Yes.
That's the nature of the things. I mean, looking at the way the UK's treated these fashion companies, you know, everyone was queuing up around the block to get into Primark as soon as they could. Burberry even had a little bit of a bounce thanks to, you know, Chinese figures. But it's this mid-range. It's this kind of what you would see in a nice shopping precinct, you know, with you know, beautiful shops and everything. They're the ones that are struggling in the middle because they don't offer luxury or, you know, kind of cheap fast fashion.
Yeah. Let's go to another one, right? Another company that you've talked about, where you want to talk about. And it also seems, to me, old economy. Now, of course, it can be done online. But Card Factory, C-A-R-D, what's happening with those there? Are there news out, some of them?
Yeah, they had results this week. I mean, do you know, listen, I'm raising them because, I mean, it seems a bit strange to talk about, you know, one of these high street stores you probably walk past 100 times. Mm. It's been a real value play in a lot of big portfolios over the past few years. If you look at some of these big value investors and the likes of, you know, think about Alex Wright and Fidelity Special Situations, huge fund with a long history. He held it for a while. I'm not really sure the position now, but it has been a real value play. Now, there's value and then there's, you know, catching the falling knife. And I think reports this week, you know, that the report of, you know, 37% drop in revenue, that's big.
Yeah.
You know, and you've got profits before tax down 125%, you know, well into that loss. Because when you think about Card Factory, you think about, okay, well, the only advantage they have is the physical store, because when I'm online, I'm probably going for Moonpig or Funky Pigeon or one of these fantastically named, you know, online propositions.
Do you know what, Dan, listen, my wife's birthday, I'm rubbish at birthdays and buying stuff. I'm the opposite of my wife. She's excellent at buying stuff. She loves going out and buying stuff. I'm more online, do as little as possible. It's her birthday today. Happy birthday, Megan. But she's not listening, never does. But, but yeah, I got Moonpig because I just think you can personalise it in some way. And it's very easy to get done, you know? So, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, this is the thing again, like we talked about with Ted Baker, you know, it's rinse and repeat. You know, there was no online channel, the Card Factory. Suddenly they bring one in. And over the pandemic, you know, lo and behold, sales are up 135% on their online channel. You know, so you have to ask, like, why didn't they do this sooner? Because they're in real diffs now. Like, let's not beat around the bush. It's a very backward-looking store on the high street.
Yeah.
You'd probably put it in the same channel is kind of Shoe Zone or something like that, and they need big changes, especially if they're going to compete and hold a retail footprint.
Yeah, well, the funny thing is when they, I remember reading a book on Jeff Bezos and Amazon when he started, and he obviously started with books on Amazon alone, and at the time, of course, they were incumbent, you know, high street stores, you know, bricks and mortar stores selling books. I think at Barnes and Noble in America, or some big stores in America. And he went to one of the big universities, I think, and did a speech there. And one of the guys said, "Well, you're just going to get taken out, or you know, you're not even taken out. Maybe just one of the big guys, the incumbents, will just start an online, you know, offering, and you won't exist." And he said, "Maybe, but we put a lot into what we do, and it's not the same as a normal bookstore. You know, it's a completely different business model." And you see this with, you know, if you've got a card factory or card, you know, whatever, online, they do personalised cards now. But they've lost the momentum here, haven't they? They're behind the curve because the Moon Pigs and Funky Pigeon and all that stuff, they are well known for doing it. And they are specialists in that. So you can't just add on or bolt on a bit of business and hope to control the market, because you've got to be a specialist in that. And like I said, what happened to Amazon and what happened to those incumbents? The incumbents now basically are struggling because they didn't. Apparently, they had a meeting with Bezos a while back and they wanted to buy him or do something. And he turned him down, and people thought Bezos was stupid. But look what they are now, and look where he is now. So yeah, you can't just, like I said, you know, you've got to really specialise in certain areas. I wouldn't have even think of going to Card Factory or anything like that, you know, for a personalised card now. I'd just go to, you know, Moonpig, because I've got an account set up. It's all done and dusted, you know.
Yeah, you can't rely on everything just to play catch-up whenever you feel like it, but you're absolutely right.
Yeah. Okay, next one. I did oldies a while back. My father owns a car sales, and he's, you know, and for years you had to be on Auto Trader, full stop, because they were the lead portal, you know, and there were others trying to compete, but like with Rightmove, they're the main dog, and they can charge exorbitant rates, but you've got to be on it, you know, otherwise people won't find your offering. So so what's happening with Auto Trader? I mean, I'm seeing the shares up today a little bit, so what's happening?
Yeah, you know, it's one of these funny things where a new investor would probably scratch their head at this. You know, revenues are down, you know, profits, you know, pre-tax profits are down 37%, but, you know, the share price is up because, you know, that's just better than expected. And I think Auto Trader were quite pragmatic over the pandemic, you know. Car showrooms were shut, you know, and you think about it, there was a rush to secondhand sales actually in the US. There's, I think, Inchcape is a company over there that did quite well in secondhand sales. So everyone was, you know, people were thinking, okay, well, what's the knock on here? I need a car. I can't afford a new one. Let's just get a runaround. Yeah. You know, Auto Trade, they waived advertising fees. And I think it's April, May, December, and February. Mm-hmm. And then put a discount in, you know, and that's kind of enticing people to do it. If they were thinking about maybe shifting a car, this was probably the thing to help them along. And you know, the pragmatic approach was, hey, you know, this is a difficult year, let's not try and stick to the guns and eke out the pounds. We probably will make a loss this year on last year, but hey, we're just gonna have to take the hit. And it feels like the market has kind of given them a little nod to that.
Yeah, I think they raised some money at the start, didn't they, when the crash happened and all that stuff. I think they raised some money, if I think about it. But yeah, well, I'm looking on the chart here. Do you have a look at charts yourself? Are you into technical analysis at all or not?
I dabble, but I come back before I become some sort of soothsayer.
Yeah. No, it's not. The more I use charts, and I've been looking at charts for like 20 years now, and I remember years back printing out loads of charts and marking things in them, and I've tried every single indicator out there. But it comes down to this, and I think, for me anyway, fundamentals of what to buy, you know, what to invest in, and then technicals, look at the chart to know, maybe fine-tune the timing of the buy, because if a share price has just gone up, you know, like especially with microcaps, they can do that. If they just jumped by double digits, you may not want to buy that, because you'd be sitting on a bit of a paper loss for a while. So that's what I look at them for. But there are distinct trading ranges you can put out, lines, you know, and it's all about price action there. I don't try and forecast where the price is going with charts, because that's impossible. But if you look at like Auto Trader, it's had several spikes up around where we are, £6.15 here, and it's touched that and failed several times. And today, again, it's sort of spiked up above that, and it's now £6.17. So it'll be interesting if it closes above that, because a close above that level where it's failed so many times over the last year or so would seem very bullish to me. But it's right on line of resistance, you know?
Yeah, also today, one of the big things probably behind that kind of spike is, you know, its choice to reinstate its dividend. You know, this is, you know, the UK, we absolutely love dividends, not so much in the US, but, you know, with the yield in the UK, it's, you know, the FTSE is offering just short of 3%. Any kind of signs of life in dividend-paying companies is going to give the shares a boost. And I think as we go through 2021, we'll see more of those coming back online. So obviously that's a positive today.
Yeah, yeah, marvelous stuff. And so yourself there, I mean, how do you trade, do you invest? What's your thoughts? Do you do a bit of both? What's going on?
So, I mean, I'm a long-term investor. I think we all start out a little bit of trading. I scared the life out of myself and then joined the kind of the Terry Smith and Nick Train school of thinking. Yeah. So I think among my age group, I think a lot of people think that kind of, you know, the early 30s are kind of jumping in and out. But I think a lot of people my age are actually long-term investors. So I'm you know, some of the things I'm holding at the minute, kind of like Diageo, Brown-Forman, actually they had results out this week. You know, they own Jack Daniels. So whenever people ask me, you know, how do you get rich quickly? I always say, well, I'm actually in a company that, you know, has been around for 140 years and withstood two world wars and prohibition, in which its own product was illegal. So that's the type of stuff that I like to be in.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know what? I'm reading a book and I highly recommend it. Morgan Housel is his name is. And it's been around for a while, but it's The Psychology of Money. And it's not about, you know, getting rich quick and all that stuff, but there's lots of stuff in there, you know, data backed. I'm listening to it on audio when I'm walking the dog. I listen to it. But I mean, one of the things he points out there is about Charlie Munger and Warren Buffett are well known, those two together. They always do obviously Warren Buffett's the most well-known, best investor in the world. And his partner there is Charlie Munger, less well-known, but very, very rich, both of them. There was a third person in that. When they first started, when Berkshire Hathaway's first started, then there's a third person involved. I'm forgetting the guy's name now, but he's no longer involved. And he was asked, "Where's that?" I think his name is Rick or something. Where's the guy gone? And Warren said, "Well, me and Charlie always knew we were going to be well off, but we weren't in any rush to do it. You know, we were happy with what we're doing. We didn't try and chase the fast buck. Whereas that third person, he basically went all out, leveraged." Himself up, you know, and then the crash happened, I think, of 1970s and the 70s, something happened, stock market crash, and literally he had margin calls everywhere. And in fact, what happened is Warren Buffett bought his Berkshire Hathaway shares off him because he had margin calls for about $40 or something like that, 40, 50 bucks, I think they were in the 70s. And now I don't know, I'm scared to look for that guy, Berkshire Hathaway stock price. Yeah, so he bought them in the 70s. Oh, right, look at that. They're now, you wouldn't believe this. So he bought them for, I'm sure it was $40, he said. He bought them off this other third partner. Now they're worth £433,125 per share.
That's hard to get over.
when people say about getting rich quick, you know, you mustn't be in a rush and leverage up. Because that happened recently, didn't it? That fund was, I don't know what it was, the name of that fund, but the guy, you know, he was pretty well off the fund, but he was over-leveraged. And when you have a crash like that, and he wanted to be, I think he wanted to be, he was probably worth, you know, 100 million, the guy who owned it, but he wanted to become, you know, a multi-billionaire, and he was in a rush to get there. What was the fund called? It was a while back. It crashed, didn't it? It literally wiped out a couple of side players. But yeah, I mean, that's it. People want to get rich quickly, don't they? And that's the trouble. And the old saying is, try and get rich quickly, and you'll probably get poor very quickly. And that's it. All you can do is invest in a good business, I think, that's improving. You know, hopefully over the long term, you build up wealth, you know?
Well, that's it. I mean, another thing that's, you know, exactly, and you know, a good company can become a bad investment as well, and the vice versa. Something that's I've been looking at, you know, it's not, none of this is obviously advice or anything, but I've just been looking at Tesco recently. You know, the fact that they got rid of those non-performing assets in Asia that were a bit of a vanity project, were really eating into the capital, were destroying the return on capital employed figures. Now that they got rid of that, I think a lot of investors are happy to look at it again, but over the long term, because as you say, you can't just look at the company and think, oh, let's take a punt on that. Yeah. For years, Tesco's share price was actually okay when return on capital employed was plummeting, which was a terrible sign. Now that they got rid of that, you know, it's nearly like a new company. So yeah, the market's always throwing up ideas.
Yeah, and also sometimes the markets are in lag, aren't they? So I've done this with small cap companies. You know, I've done research and I've looked at trading updates and all that stuff. And then you get financial results come out, which are backward looking. And of course, about 6 months out of date, and the share price drops. We think, hang on a sec, you're not looking forward here. And so you can see that with, like you said, with Tesco there, the return on capital was going down, the share price is doing well. And then all of a sudden, the markets sort of catch up and people start selling, and the selling begets selling. It takes a while. But again, if you look at Tesco's share price, since October, it's pretty much 2014, it went up to 180, And then it went up to sort of over the next, you know, seven years. It's been going in a range between £2.50 and £2. And I'm thinking, when is that going to break up? Because break up higher? Because, you know, surely it's going to be doing it for long. It's a long period of consolidation. It did hang down below £2 for a while, doing 2015, 2017. But since 2018, pretty much £2.50, £2. It's going up and down, up and down. So I'd say, you know, something like that. Wait for it to come down to sort of £2.20, anything less than that. And it seems like a good area to buy as long as business is improving, you know? Marvellous stuff. Dan, good to chat to you. Are we covering anything else? That was it. Yes. ITM Power. One more. ITM Power. Sorry, go for it. What's happening with ITM?
Oh, yeah. So for anyone who doesn't know ITM Power, they produce materials used in kind of electrolysis. They split hydrogen and oxygen, then they use this hydrogen in fuel and fuel cell storage, which has become super popular if you think about the forward-looking economy. Mm-hmm. Now, they've just released today, this morning, they just released figures on kind of the pipeline of, you know, these tender contracts that are going out. So they say they've got a tender pipeline of, you know, it's up 130% on last year. So, you know, there's people still interested in these types of things. There was there's a huge green bubble, probably coming off the January, February peak. And that was, you know, people getting very excited about this new economy. Now, it's, do you know what? It'd be a brave person to bet against, you know, these new fuel cell technologies coming in. It's just that there was a little bit too excitement, probably, and the valuations were pretty enormous. I think price to sales was somewhere in around 70, which would, you know, makes even Tesla look minuscule. Yeah. So there was probably a rightful consolidation in the space there. But, you know, I would urge anyone to have a look at the results today or just the update. You know, we've got a 190% contract backlog at ITM. So these types of businesses, probably one for the future, but they just needed a little bit of a check and reality check today.
Yeah, well, do you know what? If you look at this, you go back exactly 2 years today, 10th of June 2019, this was priced at 31 pence a share. All right? It's now priced at £3.80 a share, but it's been up to £7 a share, and that was like in January, like I said, January, February, March. But like I said, if you're in early on these big mega trends, you don't have to worry about the fundamentals of a company. Hope, hype, potential will push it crazy, and then you top slice, you take some profit because you realise fundamentally, you know, this company is way overvalued. It's when people think they're not way overvalued, you know, when they got no revenue, they're close to $1 billion in valuation, or, you know, and they go, no, it's not, it's going higher. That's the worry. But if you'd been in early here, the story is getting early, and you don't have to be right, but you've done very well. But yeah, I mean, again, do you know what? £3, I reckon that's good support level here, because it a couple of times it broke up above £3, went back down to £3, and then all of a sudden it broke up above £3 in November of last year, and then it rose and rose, but it may come back down to that now. But who knows? Yeah, you know, a lot of big fans of the. Of course, who knows? It's like anything, isn't it? Any future economy stuff, even like crypto, you know, it shoots way above where it should be valued and then comes back. You just got to make sure you're not buying at the top of the market there, because it's quite painful if you do, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and things like this. I mean, there's reports saying that compound annual growth rate in terms of hydrogen energy is going to grow at 14% for the next 6 years. These projections can change on a sixpence. And when you've got a speculative play that's only been around for a few years, if you get caught on a spike, you know, you might never see that return again. So you're absolutely right. You have to look at the fundamentals rather than buying into the hype.
Marvellous. Always try and get a bargain. That's right. I try and do it. Always try and get a bargain. You know, there's no harm in that. Marvellous stuff. Dan, thanks for that. And we'll speak you next week.
Yep, speak later, Justin.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Mobile Streams, non-mover at 0.25 pence. At four, Clinigen Group, down 5.5% at 583. At three, Valerium Blockchain, down 2.6% at 37 pence. At two, Thor Mining, down 4.35% at 1.1. And second in a row, actually, Terapati Graphite, TGR ticker there. It's up 15 or 16% to 127.5. Okay, it's time for the top five most read RNSs. They are as follows. At five, Alien Metals, termination of Donovan 2 earning agreement. At four, Net Scientific, proposed placing. At three, Cellular Goods, supply agreement signed with Willow Biosciences. At two, Omega Holdings, market update. and at 1, Greatland Gold, Haverion, further excellent drill results. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.